All right, this hour we're going to talk Mars with Wayne Herschel. We're going to bring in science advisor Richard C. Hoagland, head of the EnterpriseMission.com. We're going to talk about Cydonia and other things on Mars, and we'll get both their theories on Coast to Coast AM. And we've got with us now Wayne Herschel and, of course, Richard C. Hoagland from the EnterpriseMission.com is with us as well. Richard, you are an expert when it comes to Mars, which we're going to talk with Wayne about this entire hour. We only had to bring you in for this one. How are you?
Good morning, George.
Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Wayne.
Hey, how you doing?
How early is it where you are?
It's right now, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Are you in England?
In South Africa.
South Africa.
Somewhat of a secret location, Richard. We're holding where Wayne is back on purpose.
Oh, well, say hi to Dick Cheney for me, please.
Oh, Wayne and Richard. Is it going to be one of those conspiratorial hours?
It's going to be one of those nights, yes.
Let's go ahead. First of all, Wayne, give us, Richard especially, an overview of your theory of Mars and what you believe this tie-in might be. And then, of course, Richard has his.
Yeah, Richard was very bold as well to show that these anomalies on Mars appear to be pyramid cities, and there's this face mountain nearby, and then there's this five-sided pyramid also in the vicinity. Three big coincidences only in one close area. And knowing the Earth story, that pyramid seemed to reflect the layouts of a very important star area. How hard was it just to look at that photograph, take the Messier 45, which is the Pleiades overlay of the star photograph, and put it over the Mars anomalies? And there's 35 to 40 direct correlations with the most amazing accuracy, small stars matching small anomalies. And, you know, what can one say?
Richard, you've always said it's the geometry.
It definitely is a geometry. Yeah. Wayne's book came to me about a year ago, I think, and then I got tied up with a bunch of other things, and I only got about halfway through it. So I really am not in the perfect position to critique all of his data. But I've got to say that the correlations I saw him make with the Earth were very impressive and need to be followed up. And I'm fascinated by his story that all the academics run screaming for the hills when they are confronted with this and will not comment. That's a pattern that we found with our work going back 10, 20 years on Cydonia. And then when he got to the Cydonia part, I must say that his recognition of Cydonia as potentially matching the Pleiades star cluster, which is a cluster of very young stars that are something like 420 million years old, maybe 120, something like that, located less than 500 light years away. It's not the first time that that was proposed. What makes it interesting is that Wayne seems to have correlated and aligned the objects, particularly the face, so that it marks a potential star where his guys in his scenario could have come from. And that is original, and that is interesting, and I think that's certainly worth being followed up.
Wayne, is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, basically so, that the Mars face and the five-sided pyramid correlate with sun-like stars at around about 17,000 years ago, very accurately.
The area of Cydonia, Richard, which you, of course, have talked about in the past, and you've said that you believe we may indeed be the Martians, tell us a little bit about... Again, you know, a lot of people know you and know your history with art and Coast to Coast, but there are a lot of new people here who have never heard your Cydonia theory before. Tell us how you came upon it, if you could, and what you started thinking when you saw that face.
Well, the reason that this is important, George, is because there is no one theory from myself or the Enterprise Mission and the associates that I worked with. It's a series of theories which we have modified as we have gained new data now almost across a quarter of a century. I began doing this back in 1989. Actually, technically, I started doing it when I saw the images at JPL at that press conference on Monday morning in 1976 when Jerry Soffen, who was the Viking Project scientist, trotted out this quirky photo, and he said, you know, look what we found, and everybody giggled, and he said, when we talked about life on Mars, we didn't really mean this, and we took a picture a few hours later, and the whole thing had gone away, and of course, as an obedient member of the American Press Corps, the Fourth Estate, we all believed NASA back then, and nobody, including myself, asked a single question. Now, the question that I wished I could go back in time and ask, of course, is, Jerry, would you show us the second picture? Because he never did.
He never did.
And, in fact, it did not come to light until years later in, I believe it was 79, when Vince DiPietro and Greg Molinar, who were two Lockheed engineers working on a completely separate NASA project as commercial subcontractors on their lunch hour in their spare time, were going through the Viking files, and they did find a second frame, a second image taken of Sidonia of this remarkable face. And what made it suddenly scientific is that image was taken at a much higher sun angle when the right-hand side was clearly visible. And instead of going away, as Jerry Soffen had carefully told us, it in fact confirmed that the face on Mars was a real three-dimensional something. And what was really interesting to me, and my first hint that our friendly local neighborhood space agency may not always tell us the truth, is that Vince and Greg found this second image completely misfiled in a part of the Viking archive that no one, unless they were assiduously looking, would ever have found this image in, which meant it had to have been deliberately buried so no one could find the replicating compelling evidence that something on Mars was not natural. And my thoughts when I saw this, when I saw the two side by side, it was, well, why hasn't anybody followed up on this? Isn't NASA, the NASA that I used to work for as a consultant, the NASA that I covered, you know, for CBS and other mainstream news agencies, isn't this the agency supposed to be asking the key questions? Don't they go to Congress every year and ask for money somewhere, somehow, somewhen to look for life out there? How could they have passed this up? And, of course, 25 years later, I can tell you exactly how they passed it up, George. They wanted to pass
it
up.
They wanted to.
They dare not tell us because of all the implications that comes from my work and a lot of other people's work, and tonight from Wayne's work.
I want to read just a few paragraphs here in Wayne's book, The Hidden Records, about you, Richard, and he devotes a lot of time and a lot of chapters to you in terms of Mars, but let me read you just a few paragraphs here. It said, I finally stumbled on a copy of Monuments of Mars, almost kneeled over when turning to the page, displaying the much-anticipated image the media was raving about. At first glance at the full-page spread of Cydonia would reveal the utterly unthinkable. It was similar to the image you saw opening this chapter. There was absolutely no doubt in my mind that a pyramid star map was in contention here, in a shocking breakthrough that superseded any finding so far for me. It was almost as if I were looking directly at the stars of the Pleiades themselves, ruins on another planet, encapsulating all the findings related to my pyramid star map hypothesis here on Earth. And what also struck me was that the Mars star map displayed an architectural position with precision, which seemed to demand that the pyramid configuration representing the stars displayed slight geometric improvements in its layout. And it goes on and on where he talks about the face on Mars. Wayne, is this something that you think may be historical if we ever found out what was on that planet?
Yeah, I think it's up to a mission to go to Cydonia and look at the building blocks. For heaven's sakes, I mean, Richard will tell you the same thing. All the high-resolution images of the face anomaly, the five-sided pyramid anomaly, have a debris field that has rocks that are very oblong-shaped by the millions, and they're all no bigger than 5 meters in size. Now, surely, you know, isn't this weird kind of geology? It's only on the Cydonia anomalies. What's going on?
These pyramids, Richard, that you saw, and that truly, I've got to tell you, even I am baffled every time I look at them. They're just too smooth to look natural.
Well, on a large scale, they're smooth. When you get close-up imageries like from Mars Surveyor or even from the Themis camera on the Mars Odyssey spacecraft, which are the two spacecraft that have been orbiting Mars now for about 10 years,
right.
You see that there's lots and lots and lots of junk. These things are incredibly old, and they're incredibly degraded.
Well, our pyramids are degrading now. I mean, you can see them crumbling.
Well, and that's only over a few thousand years. Although, this is where Wayne and I kind of take separate roads, and I've been looking forward to kind of asking him some questions about the differences in our models.
All right, go ahead.
Well, for one thing, Wayne, is it true that you're dating your terrestrial star map starting at the Giza Plateau and somewhere this side of 20,000 years?
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Because from my work, and it was published in Monuments, I found a paper in Science, which is the mainstream, you know, academically peer-reviewed journal of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, going back to 1973, which looked at, how can I put this? It basically looked at the alignment of the Giza Plateau and the pyramids on it, which are just a few arc minutes off due north. And it posed the question, could the misalignment, because they're not exactly north, could the misalignment of the pyramids at Giza be due to continental drift, to plate tectonics, to the rotation of the African plate? And the answer in the Science piece was no, because when they ran the numbers were so ridiculous by the mainstream models that they just threw them out. And so they basically said, nah, that can't account for the error in the pyramids on Giza. Now, knowing of the incredible, superb accuracy of the construction of those pyramids, particularly the Great Pyramid, where you have Flinders Petrie, who was a renowned, you know, 19th century Egyptologist, talk about how the surfaces were covered with limestone, 13 acres of limestone, with the precision of an optical surface, an optician's precision. You got to say to yourself, well, if somebody could build something that accurate, why would they make an error which was so gross in the alignment if they were actually aiming toward true north? So I reran the calculation, and I've never told George this to anyone anywhere on radio or television, but because of Wayne and his provocative new ideas, I thought we would, you know, introduce this tonight. The number that I came out with for when the Giza Plateau constructions, the alignment, the geometry had to have been established was almost 200,000 years ago.
200,000 years ago.
Now, the reason this is important is because a few years later, when the DNA technology got pretty sophisticated, there was a sudden urge all over the press corps to chase down a story called The Search for Eve. Remember that?
Yes.
It was the search for the mitochondrial DNA side of the female Homo sapiens line, and they traced it back and back and back and back, and this was the laboratory at Berkeley, which was just down the street from where I was had been working on Monuments all those years. And the bottom line was that Eve, an individual human being, female human being, who supposedly was where the DNA line stopped, where, in other words, we began, was on the order of 200,000 years.
What do you think of that theory, Wayne? 200,000 years for the pyramids.
Yeah, gosh, that is really...
It's 190,000 years earlier than anybody has thought.
Yeah, gosh, let's look at one thing that I think is my first problem is the Earth impact theory 10,000 years ago, something at the end of the Ice Age. I think the Earth took a really great big thump and created the precessional wobble that we still see today as this something recoiling motion of the Earth still recovering from it. I'm pretty sure that those that'll upset the data, because obviously if the Earth wasn't impacted over that period of time, then that data would be very strong. But there's a probability.
The precession of the Earth, Wayne, has nothing to do with the position of Africa on
the Earth. I agree. I just think that the Earth took a really big impact around about 10,000 years ago that caused the oceans to flood over the land, and that might have adjusted the alignment.
Wait a minute. That's a theory. What do you do with the actual data vis-a-vis Giza and the DNA correlations, which say that something fascinating happened vis-a-vis the genesis of mankind, and someone left them? I mean, there's a whole bunch of other data at Giza, that some of which you get into in your book and some of which you don't, relating to the origin of mankind, connections to Mars, et cetera, et cetera. Someone left on this planet at Giza a specific connection that can be absolutely documented, as I do in monuments, between the Giza Plateau at 30 degrees north latitude on planet Earth and the Cydonia complex with the face on Mars at 40.868 latitude on the planet Mars. The tangent of one is the cosine of the other. And the odds of that happening by accident, we calculated years ago, was something like 7,000 to 1 against chance. So someone wanted to connect those two locations on two separate worlds. And that's why I have to look at all the numerical data, and I come to the conclusion, you know, bottom line, that whoever we are, we definitely came in through the Martian doorway. Somebody wanted to leave us a big message, capital M, that the human race, Homo sapiens, has something profound to do with Mars.
Well, you've got to see the rest of his chapters, Richard, because they are absolutely astounding. The pictures, you know how we always search around trying to find all the pictures of everything?
Sure.
He's got them all. Just about any topic we've talked about over the past couple of years, he's got incredible pictures condensed, and it's something.
Well, the key question here is the coincidence of dating, and I want to know why he is fixed on such a recent dating when, in fact, his theory could equally apply to a much earlier date.
Well, but even still, his dating is earlier than anybody else's, subject to you.
Well, actually, Graham Hancock published a book on Mars some years ago where he brought forth the asteroid theory, the impact theory, and that date of roughly 20,000 years. So, you know, Wayne is in good company, but he's not unique. What makes Wayne unique is he believes, and I think he is accurate, that he's found these maps, these correlating maps in different cultures all over this planet, with the crescendo being the map overlaid at Cydonia, saying that we need to look toward the Pleiades and toward two stars that are in the vicinity in the sky. They're not in the vicinity of the Pleiades. In fact, I don't remember how far away they are, Wayne. Do you?
The two stars in relation to the Pleiades are a few degrees. They're almost like on top of it. But
do you know their distance from Earth?
Distance. Now, here's another amazing coincidence. Would you believe the data was originally recorded all around the world with early astronomers, these in the last 100 years, as 16 light years away? And there's actually more than two, but the two are the prime ones that we have in the book, that they're both the same distance, 16 light years distance. Now, on rechecking this data, somebody has fiddled with the data and are trying to show that they're much further away. So I'm lost for words. I mean, this is supposed to be a simple topic, just to measure the difference where the Earth is 6 months apart. The Earth is 6 months apart from the Sun using the parallax method. How hard is it? But somebody's fiddling with the data.
Now, is this in all the catalogs?
Well, no. You take the most common star programs. I want to mention names of Starry Night Pro, Redshift. They're all saying 69 years away, but go to the Hubble Space Telescope. There's some conflicting data, and I've been in touch with some top astronomers, and they are saying, gosh, no, somebody's messed this up. It's probably 400 light years away, which to me doesn't really mean that much. I mean, if you can travel 16 light years space, gosh, what's 400 light years space?
No,
I mean, to me, it doesn't mean much at all.
But this is very interesting because if one wants to be conspiratorial, which, of course, on this show we never are.
Never.
But if we wanted to be, if they're only 16 as opposed to 400 or 500, it means in their minds it would be a lot more difficult to get here. That 16 might be doable, but 500 is impossible.
Richard, stay with us. Wayne, stay with us. I want to get both your takes on what you think happened to planet Mars and when. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Richard believes the pyramids of Giza, 200,000 years old. My God. If you're interested in Richard C. Hoagland's award-winning Godman and E.T. DVD series, you can call 1-877-345-6222. That's 877. That's a toll-free call, by the way. 877-345-6222. You can also get more information on the EnterpriseMission.com website. Also, you'll see a major banner there for his Joshua Tree, California event, which is now on the EnterpriseMission.com website. Detailed information about what Richard has up his sleeve, what he's planning in October. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, along with Wayne Herschel, Richard C. Hoagland, joining us this hour. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Wayne. Wayne, we'll get Richard's take. A lot of us know it, but I'd like to get your take on what you think happened to Mars. You talk about this tie-in with the similarities between Earth and Mars. Tell me a little bit about what was going on the Red Planet.
Okay. It also ties in with the original Zachariah Sitchin theory about two planets colliding in our solar system, which I'm totally behind. So I think it happened at the time around about 10,000 years ago, because it looks quite reasonable that the debris fields from these planets in collision, affected by perhaps Jupiter's pull on it, because you know how close Mars is to Jupiter. There's still another whole missing planet in the area between Jupiter and Mars, and that gravitational pull on perhaps another planet and its moon. The moon might have collided with its planet for some very obvious reason. And I think a debris field hit Earth and hit Mars pretty much the same time. And depending on where Earth was in the solar system around the sun compared to Mars is how we survived and Mars didn't. Mars was absolutely impacted. There's one whole side of the planet that has very fresh cratering. And if you look at the crater rims and edges, and they have 200 kilometer per hour winds on Mars to this day, there should be more eroded and there should be much more wiping flat of the impact zones. But there's a 2,000 kilometer wide hole in the one side of Mars. And I'm totally in support of the original Graham Hancock theory of it being impacted and pretty much nearly destroying the planet completely, because it looked like it nearly came out the other side of the planet with the volcanoes, the 5,000-kilometer-wide crack. So Earth, I think, was hit at the same time, and we call it our biblical flood. It caused the oceans to flood over the land.
Do you believe that there were inhabitants on Mars at that time?
I would say most likely, but with their technology being advanced, they should have seen it coming. Perhaps most of them evacuated. But you know what? You know, how do you evacuate a whole population of a planet? It's probably impossible.
You only take the elite. I wonder if they came here.
Yeah, perhaps.
Richard?
Atlantis. Yeah.
We'll pull you in on this. Similar, Richard, similar to what you and Van Flandern have said.
Well, yes and no. Where Graham got his ideas of impacts was, of course, from JPL, that bastion of truth, honesty, justice, the American way when it comes to the space program. Tom Van Flandern and I are looking at things that are much, much more ancient. We can now prove, I mean, there's little doubt, if any remaining doubt, that, you know, Mars used to be a satellite. It used to be a moon. It has tidal bulges fossilized in the surface. It has all the earmarks of two former oceans separated tidally, gravitationally. The idea, of course, as I've explained on this show many times, is that at some point in the past, the planet that Mars orbited blew up, literally exploded, and the shrapnel went in all directions. The time frame was 65 million years ago. That's what KO'd the dinosaurs and all those species.
And maybe the asteroid came from that planet?
Well, it would have been one of millions of asteroids, and the one that you mean that hit the dinosaurs.
Yeah, the one in the Yucatan.
The one that hit the so-called Chicxulub crater in the Yucatan.
Yeah.
And you know, that's all they wrote. Where Wayne and I are having a major disagreement is in timescales. Mm. For some reason, he wants to put all this almost yesterday, and I think that the solar system has had far more history, far more provable documentation of extraordinary things going on, and Mars is not really a footnote, but it's not almost the main story. The main story is who was here prior to 65 million years ago, what did they do? Are we their descendants?
did the refugees who he's marking now as leaving records in, you know, the 20,000-year time frame. My big question is that when somebody, some Homo sapiens, came back to the solar system and found the decadent descended refugees, you know, the poor cousins who had devolved even though they were on Earth, and they are basically our own ancestors, gave us the lift up to resume the technological ownership of the solar system that we all once shared. In other words, I think the soap opera of what happened out there and back then is so convoluted and so mixed up and so fragmented that none of us have the complete story, and we need to all keep very open minds about everything except the core elements, which is we didn't really originate here. We didn't really live in a solar system sans anything else or any other artifacts. There's tons of stuff out there. But who made it, when they made it, why they made it, and where they went, which I think is the even more interesting question compared to where they came from, is where we should now be focusing and where I'm going to be focusing our research for the next several years.
Richard, do you think that some of these answers could be found in the Bible, albeit it's not scientific, but very spiritual, that these fallen angels may indeed have been extraterrestrials that came from, let's say, Mars?
Oh, the whole Genesis 6 thing, which Michael Heiser and I had so much fun when we did the conference in Wisconsin, God, Man, E.T., that is an open book of speculation as to who were the Nephilim, who were those who were cast down, who were the giants, who were the sons of the angels, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because I think there is extraordinary clues hidden in that particular part of Genesis. Now, it has been interpreted six ways from Sunday, pun intended, but, you know, the bottom line is it basically says something about extraterrestrials who could mate with Earth women, and that doesn't happen unless there's some genetic match.
Right.
So right there, you're looking at relatives. See, where Wayne, and before, you know, you go to calls, I want to lay my little blockbuster on Wayne.
Calls the next hour. Don't worry about it.
See what he thinks. Wayne, I think your data is pretty good. I think you're onto something really cool. I have only one, apart from the timing, which is really not highly worrying to me because we'll sort out the timing. We just need more data. The key thing is, do you have the sign right? In other words, the two stars you've identified, you believe is where they came from to colonize Mars and then Earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's exactly backward, and I will bet you on it.
Okay.
I think those two stars are where they went to. They went that-a-way clue. And that's where the time frame...
What makes you say that, Richard?
Because it would be more important if you had left your poor relatives and given them a leg up and had gone back home to tell them where you went to so they could follow you, so they would have an inspiration, a motivation to become like gods. And it devolved because this planet is not very good for spiritualism or intelligence or all those things. And part of my reasoning here has to do with the two stars. Wayne carefully notes the two stars are G-type, solar-type stars. That's exactly the kind of star you would leave to if you were leaving from the solar system, having been, you know, genetically modified to like it here, to be able to live on the Earth, live in the solar system, live on Mars with solar, you know, sunlight, et cetera, et cetera. But it is highly unlikely, given the statistics of stars and what we now know from our HD modeling, is the right kind of place for intelligence to begin and thrive, that intelligence would ever begin around a G-type star. It's too small. It's not a big enough hyperdimensional gate. You wind up with very dumb people, people who at some point wind up killing themselves. And that's our major problem, and that's a whole other show.
Your take, Wayne?
That's amazing. You know, it's the first time I've heard that way of thinking. And, Richard, that is really amazing. To think that might be the difference, that it's showing where they went to. Now, that is not impossible. The only problem I have with that is From all the other reasoning that I have from other research, which I'll expand in my second book, is the collision, which is very close to what Richard's saying, the debris field that destroyed Mars and Earth. There's not much time available to leave that address and say, gosh, now this is where we have to go, because I think they were forced to leave. Not so much just going out and colonizing, which I don't know if they want to show where they're going, unless there's some major cataclysm and this is where we went. So the time factor to build them in that sort of frame to show where they went to might be a problem with me. So, but you know what? That is a fantastic new idea, and we need to look at it closely. I think it could be onto something.
Well, the thing that appeals to me most about it is it gives us a reason now to look, to get the mainstream guys to turn their telescopes, to turn the technology we have, to get the SETI people like, Seth Shostak, the George and I know very well, to look at those two stars and see if we hear or see anything that's unusual that we should not see if they are just normal G-type stars just wandering around by their lonesome. Have you, for instance, been looking at any of the catalogs for extrasolar planets? Are those stars any of the ones that Marcy and the other guys have been looking at with their long-term wobble techniques?
It's amazing you mention that, because would you believe if the data is correct that they're 69 years away, and this is what all our star programs are showing, it should be within the top 20 closest sun-like stars, if you call a sun-like star a G-class
Absolutely.
Star.
Absolutely.
And would you believe, because of the new data changes that are saying, oh, gosh, no, maybe it's 400 light years away, it is not cataloged. There's somebody that doesn't want these looked at, touched, or tampered with.
Hey, Richard, I would love to see Zahi Hawass's face when you tell him the pyramids are 200,000 years old.
Okay, now let me correct that slightly. I didn't say the pyramids are 200,000, the ones we're seeing there. I said the foundations.
Ah.
They could have been destroyed and rebuilt many, many, many times.
Well, there is talk that the pyramids may be on a foundation.
Well, my source on that is John Anthony West. Have you ever had John on as a guest?
I'm not sure.
Oh, you've got to get John.
Has
on.
Art John had him?
John is one of my Egyptian mentors. He is one of my heroes. It was his book, Serpent in the Sky, that got me seriously looking at Egypt long before Bavall wrote his book.
I know he's been on the show. I just can't remember when, but
yeah,
I'll find out.
Well, I know he's been on with Art, but I don't think he's been on with you. He has got new data, and he is a wonderful speaker. He has got an Emmy or two. We did a television show with Charlton Heston together. I was able to put that together and get his theory on mainstream NBC years ago. John has been on that plateau probably more than anybody I know, and he's the one that reported to me firsthand that the pavement, the blocks, the huge blocks that form the foundation of the entire pyramid complex, the Great Pyramid, the Khafre Pyramid, and the Mycerinus Pyramid, appear to be these incredibly massive, ancient, ancient blocks that are of the same age as the Cyclopean architecture of the Osirian down at Abydos, which is down south in Egypt.
And great etchings there.
And great, great structures and mysteries there. And also the same age as the Cyclopean, I can't say that tonight, blocks that are part of the Sphinx Temple and the so-called Valley Temple that are down the causeway near the Nile, down by the Sphinx. So John himself was suspecting, before I was able to come up with these specific dates from the 1973 science paper, that the foundation, the reworking of the plateau for whatever architecture was built by subsequent civilizations or destroyed in cycles, was much, much, much older potentially than anything we see sticking up on the plateau today. So to be very accurate, I'm saying that the plan is 200,000. The current structures might be much younger.
Okay, that might make a lot of sense. Anthony West, by the way, John Anthony West was on with Art 4 years ago. Last time he was on. Well, can you buy that theory, Wayne, that maybe the base, the foundation, could be that old?
I agree. Especially the Sphinx Temple, they're showing really amazing amount of erosion. I mean, there's granite slabs at the bottom part of the Sphinx Temple.
Exactly.
That we use as
tiles. That's what makes them appear so ancient compared to the other stuff.
I mean, how does granite erode? I mean, you know, look at the base of the Menkaure pyramid. The blocks fit like a cyclopean. Again, they're very large. They have these multi-angled edges. You can't even get a hair or a piece of paper between the blocks, and they are showing erosion that is phenomenal. And this is granite.
Well,
so there's a good chance that it's older than we think. I'd like to go with that sort of general way of thinking.
Okay. Well, Richard, a few more minutes left for you here. What's new on your plate?
Well, I'm working on October on Joshua Tree. We have a lot of interesting surprises for various people that are going to try to put all these dots together in some kind of coherent framework. Because, of course, Joshua Tree in October, and again, you can go to that link on the Enterprise website, or you can call the 800 number, is going to try to put into some context what this all might mean in terms of this approaching date that everybody's talking about, which is 2012. And one of the things that's going to be happening right after we do Joshua Tree is that this new Mars spacecraft, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, with a 20-inch telescope, which we've never had in orbit around Mars, that can look down from less than 180 miles and read the proverbial Martian license plates, although they probably didn't have archaic things like license plates, we're going to be able to get new images for the first time that would actually tell us whether Sidoni is artificial, so that anybody in the mainstream, Dan Rather included, could make that decision within a few days of the October conference that we're going to hold at Joshua Tree in Southern California.
Structures, Richard. We'll be able to see structures.
We'll be able to see the kind of constructions that Wayne is alluding to in his book. Now, I'm very intrigued that he believes that the D&M pyramid and I guess some of the other pyramids in the city are actually composed of blocks, because I've never seen anybody else specifically cite evidence, and I must say his evidence is intriguing, not conclusive yet, but it's intriguing, and what will make us decide is if we can get photos with Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter that show things as small as, get this, George, 5 inches across, and a block that's 5 meters, that's 15 feet, 16 feet, we'll be able to, potentially see the tool marks on that kind of a construction block if the pyramids we're looking at are made of blocks. Now, to give my theory some credit, I don't think they're made of blocks. I think they were very high-tech, dilapidated structures, and what happens is that when you erode a constructed building because of the uniformity of the robotics required to put it together,
mm-hmm.
it will degrade in a fractal manner. In other words, it will erode in a self-similar size range, so you're going to get debris that has a very similar look. I think that's the alternative explanation, but it doesn't mean that Wayne is wrong and I'm right, or vice versa. It means we need more data. And I have some news to announce tonight.
Go for it.
Okay? I had a conversation with a source this afternoon that is very, very, very carefully placed to have talked to some key people inside the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter project. And the question that was put to these people from me through these sources was, are you going to re-photograph Sidonia with the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter 20-inch overkill
mm-hmm.
telescope? And their answer was, we can't avoid it. There's too much public pressure. And that means, George, you're in my conversations on this show in the preceding weeks, right after the first images, are apparently having the effect. And what we need to do is to organize the incredible support we have across the country and make sure there's no way these folks can weasel out of taking the new imagery.
And let's see the imagery.
And let's see what we see without any censorship in the way.
I agree.
So Wayne and I could be on the threshold of proving some very important things, and I certainly think, Wayne, you're joining the conversation at just the right time.
Well, add to that what Michael Cremo has always believed, and that civilizations are millions of years old. You know, it may make credence to what you're saying.
Well, I've always thought that if we're looking at real stuff on Mars, it wasn't yesterday. It was very ancient. And the idea of 65 million years doesn't scare me in the slightest, because the only dating that we have of human existence and origins and evolution is from this one planet. And now that we know that this planet's data is skewed, both because of our environment, bad things keep happening here, as well as the academic process, which hides all the good stuff, how can you have a rational scientific discourse when the guys in charge of giving you the data hide all the things that would allow you to make a rational decision?
That's Richard C. Hoagland of TheEnterpriseMission.com. We'll be back with your phone calls and Wayne Herschel in a moment. On Coast to Coast AM, I'm George Norrie.